are tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, we continue our Money Smart conversations, but sometimes money moves in a different way. And we're today here with attorney Donacy Watson, who works for Chinnipin Trust, and we're going to talk about legacy and legacy. So in a way in which your dollars after you're gone are still providing for your children, your grandchildren, and the next generations. So good morning, Donna. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Donna, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from the Kansas City metropolitan area?
I am. I was born and raised in Kansas City. As an adult, I did live in other states. I lived in Illinois, Oklahoma, and New York. But this is home, and there's no place like home.
You are a licensed attorney, and you work with Chinnipin Trust, and you have over 15 years experience in probate and trust. And in 2017, you founded the Legacy Experience. What is the Legacy Experience?
So I would describe the Legacy Experience as a movement. It's a way in which I am using my experience to go into the community and create interest around estate planning, especially in communities where estate planning, there are a lot of myths around estate planning. I think the movement is such that I'm trying to create not only interest, but a passion for people to get their legal affairs in order. So it started with a book, then it started with a business, and then me speaking. I have a podcast, and it's really taking legs, if you will.
And folks, creating a legacy, doing financial legacy planning is not something just for those that are rich. Grandma has a legacy. She has a house, and in today's values, that house that grandma paid $9,000-$10,000 for is worth $200,000. And if grandma's house is not properly maintained or contained, then it's a situation where you have to go to court. But on the flip side, there have been celebrities, Prince, there was Aretha Franklin, Kobe Bryant, all celebrities, all people with multi-million dollar net worth who died intestate, which is a term when you die without a will. So we're here today to talk about how to get your house and things in order just in case, because unfortunately this is a situation that none of us will escape, but it's better to be prepared than to have the outcome. And because I've seen fights in families after this. So if grandma has it down on paper, if uncle has it down on paper, you know, sister has it down on paper, then those are their wishes, and we want to make sure in the end that their wishes are accommodated. So talk about the book, Donna. What inspired you to write the book?
So I am an only child, and in 2017, my mother passed away, and it was really unexpected. And I had to navigate estate administration from a grieving daughter's perspective. So I've worked in this space, and I am good at executing existing documents and working with families. But when you walk through the experience yourself, it takes on a whole new meaning. And I learned a lot during that process. And I think it's made me a better corporate trustee. I think it's made me a better attorney. And so I wanted to share those experiences with a larger audience. So I began with my friends and started to just have conversations with them, make sure that their parents' affairs were in order, and then it just started growing from there.
So what were some of the lessons that you learned? Because we may all think that everybody has a will, they have it on paper, they've got life insurance, and that old movie, somebody died who's got the will, trying to find that when in that stressful situation can be difficult.
Yes, yes. So I'm going to just highlight three main lessons that I learned was that everyone needs an estate plan, but you need to revisit it annually because circumstances change. Like I was married for a while, then I was divorced. I had to make sure that things were updated so that my former spouse didn't get my assets because that wasn't really my desire. I think revisiting your estate plan is important because circumstances change. I also think everyone needs an estate plan. And I think we tend to think estate planning is for certain socioeconomic people and people who have certain status, economic status. But that's not true. If you have worked or if you haven't worked, you inherited property. If you own something at death, you have an estate. And it's important that you plan for that because if you don't plan for it, the state is going to make a plan for you. And then finally, I would say the biggest lesson I learned was that you need to leave a trail of breadcrumbs for those that are left behind. When someone passes, that is not the time that they want to play, your loved ones want to play detective and have to go through your boxes and try to determine what will you had or if you had life insurance or if this is a current policy. It's best to revisit those items and have them in a place that people can find that documentation and they understand what they need to be looking for. And I think that transparency needs to come sooner rather than later.
And one thing, in those situations, usually everybody wants to take and they take all those documents and they put them into a safe deposit box and they've got the only key. And now something's happened. They don't know where the key is at, and it's chaos.
And not only do they not know where the key is, if they are the only person assigned ownership of that safety deposit box, a bank won't let you or a post office won't let you open that box just because you're the surviving spouse or you're the child of that decedent. You have to own that box with the person. And so I think, you know, while safety deposit boxes have their use, I think sometimes they're more of a detriment or a hurdle, a barrier than they are a blessing in the estate planning context. I think people should have those documents accessible to the people who are going to have to execute them after their death.
So we talk about an estate plan. What documents or what makes up an estate plan?
Okay, I think I'm going to divide that. I'm going to respond in two ways. There are estate plans that pertain to your life, so like a durable power of attorney, a healthcare directive, healthcare power of attorney. Those are documents that direct medical decisions, or they give people authority to act on your behalf during your lifetime. Okay. Then there are estate plans that arise after your death. So while you may have a will, you write the will during your life, that will doesn't come into effect until after your death. And that will directs the distribution of assets at death. Then you have trust. You may have a revocable trust. That means that trust can be changed during your lifetime. At your death, it becomes irrevocable, and then the terms of those trusts have to be followed. Or you may not have a will or a trust. Maybe you just have designations on your assets. So you may have a transfer on death notation on your car or on some titled property. You may have a payable on death notation on your bank account. That's estate planning too. Anything that helps direct the distribution at death, I would consider estate planning. Anything that deals with your property and what you want done with it, to me, is estate planning.
And folks, we just went through one of the worst pandemics that this country and this world has ever seen. And if you don't think it's relevant, I know a young man, he just turned 19. He lost his father a year and a half ago to COVID. His father had gotten remarried. They couldn't find a will. Then the new wife passed away shortly after him, COVID again. And then the son is like, well, everything's mine because it went to me because it passed from, he passed away first. You haven't seen a fight until there's money involved, there's insurance policies, there was a house that was involved. So it behooves us all to put things into play, because there were a lot of people who passed away during COVID that people were still trying to sort out their legacy and get things to where they wanted to go. And without a will, you die intestate. And as Donna said, then the state decides who gets what. So, Donna, what is a will?
So a will is, I'm going to just say, simply put it, a will is a document that directs the distribution of your assets at death. And so that will is, I'll say it becomes an active document at your death. So you can change that will 22 times during your lifetime. That's fine. It's that final will, and it's the will that is submitted to probate that is the will that is the valid will. And sometimes there are issues with what is the most recent will. The dates sometimes will give you an indication. The most recent one should be the one that is the current will. But what you really want to do is just make sure that it's communicated that you have a will. If you have an attorney that has drafted your will, in Missouri, there's an obligation to file that will, deposit that will with the court. Now, they may not open a proceeding, but we have an obligation to deposit that will with the court if we know that that there is a will. Okay, so, but there are will substitutes, and I say will substitutes. So if you don't have a will, there are ways of going through the probate process that will allow you to distribute those assets at death without going through an intestate process. Now, that might be a little bit more involved conversation than what we can have here on the radio right now, but there are alternatives. But I think the will is important because someone may pass away and they may inherit some property a day before they pass away. Then what's going to happen to that property if you don't have something outlined in a will? You may think, oh, I have someone's name on all of my property, but then maybe that person dies the same day you do, and then what's going to happen? And so I just think, you know, sometimes people wear a belt or sometimes people wear suspenders. I don't think, when we think about the estate planning context, I don't think anything's wrong with wearing belts and suspenders. It's a way of adding protection to make sure that the way you want your assets distributed is what actually happens. Because I think we work hard, Joe. I mean, every day we go to work, we try to acquire property, we acquire assets. We don't want the state to decide what happens. You know, you may have three children, and the state would say, okay, all three will divide evenly. You may have that one child, you know you can't give them any money because they'll go through it, you know, in a month. So you really want to make sure you have something in place so that your wishes are followed and not just not just what the state dictates should happen.
So, Donna, there is a will and then there's a living will. Are those the same things? Because sometimes people, they have the same name. People may get them confused.
Yes, yes. And I'm glad you brought that up. So when we talk about a will, last will and testament, we're talking about a document that directs the distribution of assets at death. That's the document that may assign a guardian. That's a document that's used in the probate court or probate jurisdiction. When we're talking about a living will, the living will talks about you and what your wishes are while you are alive, dealing with your health. So if I want to be resuscitated, if I want artificial means to be used to prolong my life, then I'm going to have a living will. Yes, I want all of those things in place. Or no, I don't want those things in place. Sometimes they're called healthcare directives. But I think that living will is so crucial. You just talked about what happened during the pandemic and during the first few months in that first year of COVID. People were passing away at exponential rates. That was the time that we really needed to start having conversations about what we want done. Do I want to be on a ventilator for 6 months? You know, there's expenses associated with that. And for some families, and for some people, that's what they want. Keep me alive as long as I have an opportunity to live. Then there's some people that are like, if I can't function on my own, pull the plug. And I really want to focus on this document because I think the biggest blessing you can have is having this conversation with your family. There is nothing like having to make that decision, being on the other side of it, and deciding if you're going to take mother off of the ventilator. What guilt you might feel if you keep her on too long, if you took her off too soon. And then everyone's going to weigh in. Everyone's going to have an opinion. Oh, you killed your mama. Oh, you just letting your mama lay there and suffer like that. Everyone's going to have an opinion. But if you're just following what your mother told you to do, it gives you a little bit more peace. Because I'm going to tell you, estate planning is helping manage the grief process that also occurs when someone dies. And people underestimate how you might feel when you're making those decisions. So the more that you can have in place, the more conversations you can have before the death takes place, the better off you'll be.
Donna, some people may be worried that I've got a will and you may be able to take, somebody could unscrupulously take the will down and file the will and take their house away from them and their other assets.
Well,
That's a myth.
I'm going to say you have to have, and I'm going to use this word, some standing to bring an action when someone dies, okay? So it only arises when someone has passed away. But you have to have some kind of standing. Like, I can't go to the court and say, I have a will for Joe Jackson and I want to, pursue getting authority over his assets. Who am I to you, right? And so I think sometimes people have those misconceptions, but that's why we're having conversations like these, Joe. We want to clear up those misconceptions. Just like, and I'll use, because you said the house, I'll use the beneficiary deed. So in Missouri, there's an opportunity for residents to create a beneficiary deed, which allows your primary residence to be transferred at death to another person, the beneficiary. Sometimes people think that person has a current interest in my home, but they don't. That arises at death. And so I think the more we can have these conversations and kind of clear up some of those misconceptions, the better off we can be.
And we're going to dig into that on the second half of the hour. So Donna, also having will guarantees that your property was going to go through probate. What is probate?
Okay, so probate is the action where a will is proved and then the court gives authority over probate assets. So I want to make sure that I'm being clear about that. If you have a will and then you present that will and file that will and open a petition, that will is only going to govern the distribution of probate assets. Well, Donna, what's a probate asset? It's an asset usually that you own individually, and there's no direction of how that property should be distributed at your death. So earlier we talked about the beneficiary deed, and so there's a transfer on death notation on that deed. So that wouldn't be a probate asset. That's a non-probate asset because that will automatically transfer to the beneficiary at death. If you have someone else's name on a bank account, so I'm saying you own it jointly with someone, that will transfer to them automatically at death. That's a non-probate asset. The probate assets are the are the assets that you own individually that you did not create a plan for. So if you have an account, no one else is on it. If you had a home and it was just you and your deceased spouse, or just you, and so now no one has authority over it, then that's when the probate action will come into play.
So in the case of you having a 401k and you don't have a beneficiary on your 401k, then your 401k would go to the court in the probate for then the court to determine how, who's going to receive the funds out of that.
Yes. So the court will also identify who will be responsible. And when I say responsible, so in Missouri, you're going to have an attorney, but you're also going to have someone who will get like letters of administration if you die without a will, or that is going to serve as the executor of the estate. That person is going to work with that attorney to decide what the assets are, the probate assets that the court is going to review. And then that person is also going to decide or going to work with the attorney about creating an inventory and giving an accounting. And then the court will decide how these assets will be distributed based on what is said in the will or based on if there isn't a will. So you want to really make sure you review all of your assets annually, because things change. And you may open an account, you may change jobs, you know, you create a new 401k or other deferred compensation account. Make sure you put someone's name on it and make sure you get all of their pertinent information so that you don't have a situation where you're going to probate for something that could have been addressed prior to death.
So if you have a question, give us a call in our studio line, 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. So, Donna, wills are like milk, eggs, everything else. At some point, they can spoil. How long do you have to present the will here in Missouri and Kansas after a person has passed away?
So in Missouri, you have 1 year after death to present the will. In Kansas, you have 6 months. Now, sometimes a will isn't presented in those time frames, and so there are alternatives to this probate process that can be used, like determination of descent. But ordinarily, if a will isn't presented, there you're going to be kind of subject to the intestate laws of the state. And then also, sometimes people don't know that there's an asset that is a probate asset, because if they just found out that dad or mom owned a property, they didn't know that within this time frame, so you might be outside of it. But don't be alarmed if you didn't present the will. There are ways of getting authority over that asset, but generally, if you want to make sure that this distribution reflects the intent of the person that created the will, you want to get them filed and get the petition open within those time frames.
So is it expensive to probate a will, Donna? Because you have to have attorneys, there's filing fees, court costs.
Yes, it can get expensive. So if you have a will, there's filing fees, but then also, like, the expense is really going to be based on the value of the estate. So that's why you do an inventory. That's why you show how much the property is worth. If you have a will and the will does not say you don't serve without a bond, that the executor doesn't serve without a bond, then that's going to be an additional expense that the executor will have to take into account. So when we say a bond, it's just an insurance protection that the executor won't participate in any wrongdoings that will affect the value of the estate or affect the beneficiaries. And so it can get costly, and it's time consuming. So let's just say this. Sometimes people think, oh, someone passed away, and so we want to get this wrapped up in, you know, the next couple of weeks. It will not be in the next couple of weeks. I mean, you need to give yourself at least a year and a half. And that is just if it's a clean probate action. When I say clean, everything's identified. There are no No one's arguing. There are no will contests. And I say that because we have to manage expectations. So if you're going through the probate process, if you think the wheels of justice run slowly in civil cases and in other cases, they run really slowly in the probate space. And so you have to manage that expectation. No one's going to get authority over assets in a couple of months. So just wanted to throw that out there because I think a lot of times people think this is so urgent, and for you it is urgent. But then you have to think, people die every day, and the volume of cases that our courts have to manage are high. And so it won't happen overnight.
So, Donna, one of the most important things is with the will is naming an executor. What is an executor and what does he or she do?
Okay, so the executor is the person, I'm going to say, it's the person who's going to represent the estate of the decedent. Decedent is the person that's died. So the executor works with the attorney. They help find all the assets. They help in listing all the assets, inventorying the assets, because you have to present an inventory to the court. And that executor role is can be a very cumbersome role. You want to identify someone that is detailed oriented, someone that loves to work diligently and has the temperament to serve as an executor. I think sometimes when we think about appointing people like a power of attorney or an executor or a guardian, we just think, oh, this is my relative, so I'm just going to appoint this person. No, you want to appoint someone that has the skill set to do the work. And so that executor, identifying someone as an executor is really something you should take a lot of time to do. And you should also identify a successor, because maybe the executor won't be able to serve by the time you pass away. Maybe they have aged, or maybe they have passed away and you haven't had an opportunity to update that will. So you want to name a successor. In all of the things that, in all of the documents in which you appoint someone, you want to appoint a successor, because things happen. You want someone else to be able to step up.
That person that you named as benefit, meaning as executor, could be in the same car, plane, bus, train accident. Short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Donna Watson, attorney with Chinkapin Trust. And we're talking about leaving a legacy for your family. Stay tuned right back after this short break. We're back. This is Joseph Jackson, hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. So, Donna, you talked about a beneficiary deed earlier. How does a beneficiary deed work?
So, the beneficiary deed is a document. It's titled to your primary residence, and there is a notation on that title that says, at death, you're going to transfer that asset to and whatever that or whoever that named beneficiary is. And I want to really kind of emphasize the fact the named beneficiary does not have a current interest in your home. So they can't, you know, mortgage your property or use it as collateral. They don't have an interest, a current interest in that home. That interest only arises at your death. Now, let me tell you something else about a beneficiary deed. I can change that as many times as I want to go to the county and update that deed, okay? And that's important because I think sometimes, as we talked about, things change in life. Maybe you want to leave a home to your child, but then as you age, maybe you have a grandchild that's going to be an adult, and so you want to leave it to them directly. So because circumstances change, maybe that deed will need to change, or that beneficiary on that deed will change. And then you just update it. And so it's very important that people have an understanding of what ownership what that ownership looks like during the person's life and what that ownership looks like at their death.
We've got a caller. Caller, are you still there? You had a question,
yes,
or comment? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'd like to give a shout out to you, Mr. Jackson, for having a series of fabulous programs for the community to make their life better. So you're doing a great job. Keep continuing to do the job. Also, I wanted to get some information on your guest. How can I contact her, and also in terms of cost, what would be the cost to get her services?
Okay, thank you very much. So I have a platform where I am doing speaking engagements, and I refer out legal work to a small clientele or colleagues. I work for a company now, and so I do not practice individually, but I can be contacted at Donna@mylegacyexperience.com, and I am quick to send referrals to very competent attorneys that I work with and have been my colleagues over the past several years. So that's Donna@mylegacyexperience.com.
So, Donna, you were saying about the beneficiary deed. One of the things that, you know, a person doesn't have any, they don't have any interest in your home while you're alive. You can change the beneficiary deeds. But is a beneficiary deed like a will? Does it have to be, can it be filed after the person passes away, or when does it need to be filed?
So it needs to be filed during their lifetime in the county in which, in the county of record. So you want to make sure the deed is recorded. I had a situation, and I'll be, you know, this is the transparency. My mother had a beneficiary deed, and I found it in her desk. And imagine my embarrassment, my frustration. I had a plethora of emotions about that. And I thought, wow, I know we had talked about that. I know we had gone, but I didn't live in Missouri at that time. That's still not an excuse. But you want to make sure that it's filed. And so with things that have to be recorded, just take that extra step. I know that that's going to be going to down to the county and recording, and you had to think about parking, and you had to think about all those things, but just take that extra step. Those steps, those preventative steps, will help with managing emotions and time on the back end, because a house is usually over $40,000. And while we have small estate proceedings in Missouri, her house was over $40,000. So I had to open a large estate. Now, a state or probate action. So I think it's just important to make sure you follow through with all of the steps.
And I will say this, folks, in today's real estate economy, a fixer-upper can easily run that amount. When houses are selling for $125,000, $130,000, $140,000, that means that any estate that's going to be open up is not going to be a small estate. It's going to be a larger estate, which means it may cost a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But also with probate, Donna, if the house is still in grandma's name, grandpa's name, property, and there's no beneficiary deed, you have to go through probate because you can't sell the property.
That's right. And so I think sometimes, and I'm just being very candid, sometimes we just go ahead and move into the house. We just, if there's a mortgage, we just keep paying it. If there's taxes, we just pay it. But you really don't have authority over that house. You can't sell it. You can't negotiate it. You really aren't supposed to even take occupancy. But sometimes we do things out of, you know, customs, or we take shortcuts, right? But it's important to get authority over that asset, because at some point you're going to need to either sell it or transfer it. If there's anything that arises associated with that home and you don't have authority over that home, there's no way that you can really address, from a legal perspective, any of those challenges that may arise. So it's important. It is so important that you get authority over those assets. So the executor of the estate, if there's a will be able to get authority over that asset. Or if you die intestate and you open a probate action, you will get letters of administration. And those letters of administration will allow you to sell the home.
And how that's relevant, I've got friends about real estate. There was a family, the mom passed away, the house was in her name, there was a no beneficiary deed, and there was five siblings, and they were just trying to get money to do the funeral and different things, and they were trying to sell it to somebody that I knew. And he asked me, and I said, well, there's one. I said, she only passed away about 3 weeks ago. I said, there's no beneficiary deed. You don't have anything, and they're trying to sell you something. They said, well, they're all willing to sign a document. And I said, you can pay them today. They can sign that document tomorrow. And on Friday, they can be in the courthouse filing litigation. And I said, your money will have been gone.
Yes, yes. Because here's the thing. You want to transfer marketable title to someone. That means it's free of encumbrances, any liens that you know of. And so sometimes people want to quit claim deed some things, and you know, you've got to make sure that that's good title when you're purchasing property. And you're only going to have good title from someone who died if they had a beneficiary deed. And so then the beneficiary needs to retitle that asset. So you don't just keep this beneficiary deed that has them as the TLD. They then need to retitle that asset. Or if they have letters of administration when they went through probate, then they can sell that property, but they sell it as personal representative of the decedent. And that's how that would be signed. So you have to make sure that when you're purchasing property that you get good title. And I'm just going to say this. If you're purchasing property from someone that died 2-3 weeks ago, there may be some, how do I want to put it? You may not be getting marketable title. You just may not be. And so I think you just want to make sure you're clear, you're investigating what you're really purchasing. Because if someone's trying to sell something that quick, there may be a reason, and it may not be on the up and up.
So, Donna, every estate may have expenses. There may be expenses that you may have to cover from, you know, burying that person, their, you know, final deposition of them. You know, what expenses does an estate have to pay?
Okay, so let's talk about just expenses to, like, bury people. So when someone dies, there's the expense of disposing their body. Now, whether you cremate or you have a burial, there's going to be an expense. Now, if you have life insurance, generally, you can assign that life insurance to a funeral home, and they will work with the insurance carrier and pay for, and they'll get their money, okay? If that policy is a valid policy and it's paid up in the premiums. But if you are in a situation and you don't have a burial plan and you don't have life insurance, you're going to have to pay for that outright. So one of the things that I always recommend is that there is an account. The decedent or the decedent's family have pools of money for just things that are going to come up. So I find that when there are nothing is in place, a cremation might be the most economical situation. And you can find a cremation services anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000. And then maybe you can pay that over time. But don't break the bank trying to dispose of the decedent. That's just my personal view, because there are other expenses that are likely going to come up. You're going to have to get death certificates. And I know you're saying, Donna, a death certificate is probably like $20. Okay, yes, but after time, you start thinking about all the things that you have to get, those $20 and then faxing something and then making copies of this and making copies of that. All of that can start adding up. So you really want to make sure that there's a pool of money available. And if there are loved ones that are alive after someone's death, they should pool their resources to make sure that those things are taken care of. Some things you're not going to be able to take from the estate immediately, right? You're not going to be able to tell the court, well, I need money to pay for these. That's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. So you're going to have to pay out of your pocket. You can put that on the accounting so that they can know that these are the things that have been paid, and that will, when they're talking about the final distribution, those things can reduce the value of the estate. But you're going to have money, cash money, credit card money, money available to pay for those expenses.
And folks, even when the great one Michael Jackson passed away, that was one of the things that held up the funeral a little bit, because they had to have money to be able to purchase his where he was going to finally rest at. And, you know, it took time. So I also want to say this, you know, I lost my father a couple of years ago, and he was 95 years old. But one of the things was this, is that in 1987, 1988, he went to L.A. Jones and bought their most expensive policy at that time, which was $2,000. It was like $2,300. When he passed away 2 years ago, it was, we took the certificate up there, they verified from the records, it was paid in full. And I just happened to ask, I said, if we wouldn't have this policy, how much would it cost? He said, right now, you've been looking at about $8,000. Folks, pre-need is a good way. And then you can pass on those insurance funds that you may have to your family members to be able to do some things with. You can pay for it, and you're going to pay. Think of pre-need like layaway. You're going to be able to get it when you need it, but pay half as much for it. And if you got, when you were saying about the death certificates, if you have life insurance, each company is going to want a certified copy yes. of the death certificate, which is anywhere from $35 to $50 per copy. If you had three policies, that's $150 right there. Mm-hmm. Look at the pre-need programs. Mm-hmm. You can save yourself a lot of money being able to do that. And then when something happens, all we had to pay at that time was the tax, because they can't factor in the tax. You know, everything else, he was a veteran, everything else, you know, Leavenworth, open and closing, all those mm-hmm. were there. During this time, I cannot stress enough, you and your family will be going through a lot of stress, trying to find wills, beneficiary deeds, all these different things. Begin to put some things in place and let them know what you would have wanted at that time.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, Joe. So I will be candid. I'm 50 years old, and during the pandemic, I decided I was going to pay for my funeral. So I bought a cemetery plot. I paid for the open and closed casket. I have all of those things in place. Now, I am prayerful and hopeful that I'll live a lot longer, but I wanted to have those things in place for a couple of reasons. One, I am single. Two, I do have a sibling, but she lives out of town. And I just wanted to make sure that when I pass away, that process is as seamless for my cousins, because I have a whole bunch of cousins. Is it seamless for my cousins as possible? Because I think estate planning is a loving thing to do. What's also interesting to me, we will put protections in place for our cell phone, for our car, for our anything else we own, right? But we will not do the things that we need to do to protect our person. And I think that that is a travesty. And I think that that really requires a shift in the way that we think. Because I don't know how often I used to hear, well, I'll be dead, I don't have to worry about it. I think one of the most loving things you can do for your family members is to put some things in place so they don't have to deal with that. Because let me tell you, when my mother passed away, my mother was a caretaker for my great aunt. My great aunt died May 1st, and then my mother died May 5th. That was just like back to back. All I did was walk in with this pre-need, and they were like, what color casket do you want? Blue. And so that's all I had to think about, and her outfit. That's all I had to think about. And that was so loving, because I was just dealing with so much trauma with losing the two most important matriarchs of my family and of my life. I loved them dearly. And so I didn't have to worry about any of the legal issues. They had already paid for all that. There was already money set aside. I had money set aside to address any of the estate issues, getting those death certificates. But it's such a loving thing to do. So you really want to equip your family member with the ability to go on. They're going to be grieving. So let's make that grieving process less stressful by having our legal affairs in order.
So Donna, as we start winding down, is it expensive to set up to make sure that you have your estate planning put together?
No. Okay. So is it expensive? Expensive is relative. Are you going to create a revocable trust? you want to put all of your assets in a trust and you want those assets to continue to grow over time for a beneficiary. That can cost anywhere from like $2,500 to $5,000, depending on the size or the amount of work that's done and the attorney that's doing it. Okay, you think about $3,000. I have seen people posting on social media that they're going on trips, okay? I can imagine, and especially with the airline industry, that you're spending that much or close to that much on, you know, your social entertainment. Why not spend that kind of money on your protections? And usually, you can make things in payments. That's the good thing about America. America loves some payment plans, right? And so I think it's worth it. Now, when you're talking about having someone added to an account, that's usually just paperwork. It doesn't even cost anything. So if I want to add someone as a payable, if I want to add a payable on death notation, I just go to the bank and just change that card, that notation on my account. If I want to own something jointly with someone, I just add their name. So there are some things, and those are those non-probate transfers, they don't cost anything. A will could be anywhere $500 to $1,000. I think it's worth it. I think it's so worth it. We spend money on other professional services, hair, nails, waxing. Why not do something that's going to protect you and your family?
So Donna, you have a podcast, but you also have your book. Where can people find your podcast and where can they find your book?
So my podcast is on every single podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, and you can just Google my name or type in my name and then my legacy experience will come up. I have interviews with life insurance providers. I have interviews with investment managers. We talk about things that are pertinent and relevant to creating an estate and protecting that estate. So please check that out. As for my book is on Amazon, but my book is also in the Kansas City Public Library. So this is really a mission. This is really my purpose in terms of getting out into the community and sharing information. This isn't just about a profit. My business is really about my ministry. It gives me a platform to have these conversations, to get in front of people that I wouldn't ordinarily be exposed to, or having people get access to me, okay, and being able to hear information that they need that will make a difference in their lives.
And you also do a lot of community events. Do you have any community events coming up?
Yes, I'm going to be working with the Deed Foundation in conjunction with the Kansas City, Missouri Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta next week. They have been running a series of financial wellness, I'll call them, seminars. And so I'll be doing one next Friday, the 21st, with them. And I'm really excited about that. I love the opportunity to help equip people to leave a legacy, because I think that that's our biggest gift to our family and to the next generation.
As we close out, do you have any other advice you want to give our listeners?
I think it's important to think beyond ourselves. I think about my grandmother, who grew up in Liberty, Missouri. She lived in a one-room home with seven brothers and sisters. They did not have running water. They did not have plumbing. She would have been 103 years old if she were still alive. I am her wildest dream. I am her wildest dream. And I think about the sacrifices that she made for my mother and the sacrifices my mother made for me. We've got to think beyond ourselves, because if I do things to make things easier for the next generation, things can only get better. And we are behind. In certain communities, we haven't had access to resources or opportunities to leave financial legacies, but we can start doing that today. So I implore you, if there are some adjustments you need to make to your budget, to your lifestyle, so that you can leave a legacy, a financial legacy, do it.
I want to thank Donna for being our guest today. Folks, we never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. Councilman Brandon Ellington's free food distribution will be today at Mount Sinai Missionary Baptist Church, located at 3634 Brooklyn. The food giveaway will start at 10 and end at noon. and also a programmable thermostat can make such a difference and save you a lot of money, but also can make you money. Evergy will pay you each year you're in their programmable thermostat program, and if you get it and you install it yourself, they'll pay you $50. So for more information, go to evergy.com and look at programmable thermostats. So for Cowtown Conversations, join us as we next week we're going to have Stacy Johnson Crosby back, and we're going to be talking about a down payment assistance program that can help you with as much as $10,000. This has been your host, Joseph Jackson, saying have a great day and stay tuned for Signal to Noise. Mm-hmm.